Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Hi, welcome to Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P. here as always. Today's guest is Mr. Declan Finn. How are we doing today, Declan?
I'm doing good. We've got a fairly good day in Texas. A little cloudy, but I'll take it over excessive heat.
Well, the few memories I have of Texas, it's pretty warm down there. Excessive would be the word I would use for any spring day, I suppose. But that's me, that's not you. So, Declan, you, as most of my guests, are an author. One of the things I think you have in most of them is, from what I can tell, you've been a very prolific writer. How long have you been doing this?
I have been doing this for 25 years. I have been only published for the last 11, mainly because I fell into some of the usual traps. It's, oh, well, you have to get a real job first, and then you can worry about trying to publish stuff. Well, I tried the real world. I don't recommend it, especially the paths I took were through academia, and that shot me in the foot, the kneecap, and a few other places. So, and at one point I went through two or three agents, and I got an agent at a perfect time. 2009, September, the exact month that Simon & Schuster laid off 10,000 people. And the entire industry said, you know what? We may have overexpanded. We're going to start cutting back.
Oh, good Lord.
Perfect timing. Uh-huh. So, about 2012, I started self-publishing. And the funny thing is, I started self-publishing, and within 3 years, I had more publishers who actually wanted my work. It's like, where were you guys, you know, 3 years earlier? So
I'm curious, did you ultimately decide to go with a publisher after that, or did you stay self-publishing?
I went with publishers for simple reason that, one, they provide better covers. If you want to laugh, look up early editions of my first book. It was only on Stun. It was a, you know, straightforward murder mystery set at a sci-fi convention.
Okay.
And the cover is bad on the print edition. Somebody else gave me a Kindle version later on, one of my fans, who said, please God, this cover is terrible. Here, I'm giving you this for free. I like the book. It needs a better cover. But the publishers have better covers, and usually they have a better idea of marketing. Do not rely on that, however. We can get into that later.
Well, that's the reason I ask, because from what I've heard, very rarely do publishers do much about marketing. It's like, hey, here's your book, go figure it out.
I am with smaller publishers.
Okay.
Where they want the success, they're going for the success, they are going to pimp out your book, but come hell or high water. And frankly, if they did not have marketing aspects to them, I wouldn't even bother, because I've done this.
And that's why I ask. Like, if you've successfully released books, why go with someone who's not going to do anything?
Well, to your point, two of my publishers have folded. I have another three now. And the last publisher folded, and I was told point blank that I was doing more marketing than they were. One of the reasons they were folding was, A, you're one of our biggest sellers. B, we're not really giving you that much. So, C, here, have your books back. It's your money. Have fun. Have a nice day. So, yeah, it really depends on the publisher. It really depends on a multitude of factors, really. With my publisher, they were doing very good on marketing. Then COVID hit, and they were running three businesses, and COVID took, you know,
I'm
whacked all three.
How did you see COVID affect, like, the book market for you?
Well, in terms of my it mostly hit me because of my publisher, for the simple reason that they had a very well-tuned schedule that involve, you know, it was literally a mom and pop shop. It was run by a husband and wife. One, you know, when one was working at the office, one had the kids and vice versa. And one in one case, it was, the office was editing books, formatting them, and getting them out there. And COVID took that schedule and wrecked it all to heck. So now, granted, for me, it was perfect because I self-published two books. I wrote four that year in 2020 because, gee, I'm a writer. If I were sociable and liked people, I wouldn't be a writer. I wouldn't lock myself in a room 7 hours a day away from people. But it's like, oh, wait, I get to social distance. How is this different from my normal day? So I got to pump out, you know, four books in a series. I finished off my St. Tommy NYPD series in 2020. But you can tell just how bad my last publisher was hit because those four books did not come out till last year under my new publisher. So it hit them hard. I'm told that sales were down for a lot of people during COVID for a simple reason of, well, you can't go out to Barnes & Noble and get new books. And B, a lot of readers are looking at their to-be-read piles. They're locked in their house with their to-be-read piles. And it's, no one's buying anything new because we're trying to get rid of everything we have. That's what I was told, whether or not it's accurate. You need a crystal ball to tell.
I'm going to be honest, I didn't stop buying books during COVID, so Amazon still ships, guys. So I enjoy seeing your big Catholicism on your shirt. Is that a big part of who you are and like what the writing is for you?
Me, yes. It keeps slipping into the writing, whether I like it or not. You know, it's, for example, it was only unstopped. It's a murder mystery. I still wound up having my main character, who is a security professional, bodyguarding an actress who's going to church for on Sunday Mass, and I had some fun with nerds and geeks at Mass, or, you know, or it's,
oh, good Lord.
You know, may the force be with you and with your spirit, you know, things like that. So in some cases it slips in, and in some cases I just use it for mythology. For example, my St. Tommy NYPD series has a cop fighting, well, demons. I did not know that. You know, I figured I was the only guy who did this. Then I found out that, oh, wait, Dean Koontz did this about 25, 26 years ago. So, oops.
And I'm gonna be honest. Before he did it, there was a character known as, goodness, this is going to kill me. It's Clive Barker character from, like, his early books of Blood. Yes. Harry D'Amore.
Yes. Yes. He's the only other person I think I've seen in with that genre, so.
For the record, he's my favorite author, so he's got me terrified to read the series, because I'm like, if it doesn't live up to Harry D'Amore, I don't know if I can take it.
Well, with my books, I don't have to create mythology because, oh, look, it's fighting demons. Catholic Church have a few books on demons.
That they do.
And it's hilarious, because some of the books I read on demons, it's like, wait, what do you mean they're making a Russell Crowe movie out of this? What? No, I'm sorry. Father Amorth is not Russell Crowe. He's a very cranky Italian exorcist.
Yeah.
Who's mostly cranky at other bishops, because even within the Catholic Church, they look at things like The Exorcist and it's, oh, this is a pretty fantasy. Guys, this is based on an actual incident.
Well, a lot of the Catholic Church is also, some of the circles I run in, they're not very happy with some of the turns the Catholic Church has taken over the past, say, 30, 40 years. So I've got some friends that are still going to Latin Mass, put it that way.
No, I understand this. I actually, one of the reasons I moved to Texas from New York was they have Latin Masses down here. They haven't been banned by the local bishops, which can be a little bit annoying. But, it's nice when I actually go to Mass and hear, oh, yes, hell exists. Here's this thing called confession. You should probably show up at it. It's like, I haven't heard this sermon in about 20 years. It's nice to have that change.
So you've used the term earlier when we were talking called TradPub. What exactly is that?
Traditional publishing, usually referred to as the Big Five, Big Four. It's kind of hard to keep track because over the past 5-10 years, there have been so many mergers, I can't really keep track of how many there are supposed to be right now. Traditional publishing is, you know, anyone from George R. R. Martin to John Scalzi. A lot of what you get in Barnes & Noble is considered traditional publishing, or tradpub. And depending on who you talk to, it has negative connotation. Mostly because, well, that's a very long story. But a lot of tradpub has gatekeepers that slant particular ways and judge books less on their fun and entertaining qualities and more on, this caters to X political bent, which drives me insane. It's like, hi, step one, is the book good? Yes? Great, let's publish it. No? Let's throw it out. It doesn't matter if it's published by, you know, a male, feminist, disabled, trans, lesbian. I don't know.
Well, personally, like, I can see why that would be useful for some people to market a book. My struggle becomes, why are you trying to mass market books based on those qualities? And the idea of selling a book, I see why people, they want to have it so that it appeals to everyone, especially at like that level. The problem is none of us, we've grown up in the age of the internet. No one is interested in selling books at that level anymore, or buying books at that, because much like the music industry went through 30 years ago, I can find something that is tailored exactly and specifically to my tastes, which is why the minute I saw the whole Iron Age thing pop up, I was like, oh, they finally realized what we realized 30 years ago in music, is that we can do this on our own. We don't need anybody else. And we can make exactly what we want to see. And so when people ask me why I'm trying to do what I'm trying to do, it's like, who wouldn't try and make more books that they like? Like, I just want to help people make the stuff I want to read.
Exactly. And one of the nice things about Iron Age is I know people who were beating this drum 10 and 15 years ago. And it's so nice that it's a movement now. It's like, hi, welcome to the party. We have drinks. They're a little warm by now because we've been here a while.
Yeah, you dump enough liquor in them, you won't notice.
This is true. But yeah, like I said, it was so nice to see that it's now a movement that has caught on. Because, you know, 8 years ago, there was a movement. It was based mostly around the Hugos, but it was all about pushing, you know, what was good, be it indie, be it right, be it left, be it a box by the door. And it was all about pushing good material over, this book falls in with this click, or this book hits all the right check boxes.
I think I remember Larry Correa talking about it back then.
Yeah, way back when. If you guys want a laugh, look up Larry Correa's website and Sad Puppies. If you look anywhere else, you're going to get a lot of nonsense. But it was highly entertaining.
He's very, very funny when he wants to be. He has that, what is it, the number first in customer service. I can't remember the guy's name, but
Tom Stranger.
Tom Stranger, and good Lord, that stuff is funny.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little, I don't know, it's a little Trumpy for me, but, like, the comedy itself is just, like, silly. It's just a silly book.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it went Trumpy, especially in book two, mainly because, let's face it, right or left, Trump can be funny as hell, and you don't need to caricature him much.
Exactly. So we've talked about you a little bit in your past, how you got into writing. We've talked even a little bit about your writing. But one of the things that like we've talked about is that your writing kind of goes all over the place. Like you enjoy different genres and you like doing what you're going to do at the time. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you've done within writing? How many books have you put out so far? What kind of ground have you covered in that way?
I've written 30 books. Well, I published over 30 books. Written, I still have a few more I've written that haven't been published yet, mainly because, well, as my last publisher said, you know what? You can take a break. We've got a few books still to be published in the queue. Relax. So
there's a marketing cycle. Let's get them through the cycle.
Mm-hmm. But I've done murder mysteries. I've done urban fantasy / action horror because, yes, I've got some Lovecraftian stuff. I've also got a lot of gunplay, and my characters use thermite. It's like, oh wait, we've got a Bokor. Okay, Let's record up a ton of thermite on it and see what happens. Things like that. So that's action horror. I have what is technically a vampire romance. I say technically because the first half of these books are all character-driven, and the second half are all gunplay and explosions. So a lot of the vampire romance crowd go, you know what? You may have too many explosions for me. Maybe.
I mean, you're suddenly getting me interested in vampire romance, I'm going to be completely honest.
Yeah, well, one of the running gags I had on my website was talking about Vatican ninjas, because, you know, back when I started writing, you know, Dan Brown was a thing, and I tripped over a line where it's, well, the Catholic Church no longer sends out assassins. It's like, wait, we have Vatican ninjas? What, can I have where are these Vatican ninjas and where can I find them?
Which branch of the Swiss Guard are the ninjas in?
Exactly. It, for my vampire romance, I threw in Vatican ninjas who were Spec Ops division of the Swiss Guard. So I had some fun with that. I have a space opera series that was my first project that I wrote back in 1998. It started off as fan fiction, and by book two, it had become something so radically different from the original property. I have spent the last 20-some-odd years rewriting it so that it looked nothing like the original product, and now I'm on book five of that. It's called White Ops, which is a play on Black Ops. So they've got the space opera, I've got St. Tommy, which is urban fantasy slash horror, the vampire romance, which is Love at First Bite. Yes, I did kind of steal the series title from a movie. That's a good chunk of my output. I've got several other murder mysteries, some straight-up thrillers, which I'm a historian by training, which was, you know, I graduated with my master's in 2004. Dan Brown was big at the time. I tried reading his books, and I wrote five books as revenge, because it's, no, this doesn't happen like this. Okay, fine. If this yo-yo can get published with his boring writing and his crappy history, I can do better than this. I think I did, but that's another conversation.
I have to ask the question just because you mentioned that we were talking about the Catholic Church. Have you ever watched the TV show Lucy, Daughter of the Devil, put out by Lauren Bruchard, the guy behind Home Movies? I only ask because the main premise of the show is that the second coming is happening, and in an effort to reach Jesus, the Catholic Church sends out the special fathers, which is like an elite task force of these specific priests. Now, granted, it's an animated comedy, and so it's mostly them being bumbling idiots, but the idea of the Catholic Church just having like a special forces that they send out cracks me up.
Well, as a Catholic, I can definitely see a entire force of bumbling priests. That's not very difficult for me, but never heard of it. I did watch Lucifer for a while. I found it, you know, everyone saw Lucifer. It's like, oh, he's a cool, edgy, you know, Satan. I looked at him as like, he's a hedonist with daddy issues. This is perfect. It's like, do they realize they're making fun of Satan? Apparently not.
Well, I mean, Satan's such a compelling character because what is canon in Catholicism about his character? Like, he's the opposite. He's supposed to be all of, like, the best of, or I guess, our most impressive human qualities, but, like, none of the goodness. So you're looking at someone who's, you know, endlessly likable, but, you know, carries around that, like, the darkness inside him. What's not fun to write about that?
I do recommend a novel. It's, hopefully you can get a copy of it these days, called Dialogues with the Devil by Taylor Caldwell. It's got to be 50 years old now, but I've got a family library that's been accumulated for 60 years. So it is an interesting, it is somehow a philosophical discussion that's plot heavy and character driven and very compelling. And I don't know how Taylor Caldwell pulled it off. And I forget if Taylor is a he or a she.
Wouldn't really matter to me, but that sounds actually really interesting. So you've started out your career as being self-published. You've worked with small publishers since then. What are some of the biggest hurdles that you see out there for new people getting into self-publishing? Or the idea of like going out, branding, marketing themselves?
Well, step one, this assumes that you want to sell books. There are some people who go into self-publishing and it's, you know, we're going to self-publish, you know, a family history for, you know, the kids or, you know, for extended family members or something like that. This assumes you want to sell and make money off of this. One, get honest editors. I don't care if you have friends and family who do this, as long as they are ruthless people. I've got a mother who, used to read the newspaper with a red pen in her hand to correct what the news articles were doing. I have a sister who's an English major. It's got to be good for something, right? And I've got an entire family of readers where, if I screw up, they will come down on me. I've got friends as well who will do the same. So step one, get an editor, make sure your book is good, and if you don't have any editors, take the book, put it aside, come back to it 3 to 6 months later. You will find out that it is terrible. You will go through it, and you will go, who wrote this crap? Wait, it was me. What drugs was I on? Trust me, this happens more often than I can tell you, and that's just with my own stuff. So, one, editing. Two, either learn graphics programs or make friends with people who know graphics programs, because if you're self-publishing, the cover might be the most important marketing tool you are going to have. And if you don't believe me, look up a book called Empress Teresa and try not to read it and try not to go blind looking at the cover. It is a nightmare. So, one, editing. Two, learn graphic programs or make friends with artists. And three, well, if I had to do it all over again, I probably would have gotten a business degree in marketing, because good God, trying to sell is fun. Half of my time with self-published books, I spend just trying to market them, be it Twitter, Facebook, MeWe, and learn to make friends. I know this is hard for a lot of us introvert writers, but learn to make friends, because these are some of the people who will either A, buy your book, B, talk up your book. They will also probably be some of the people who go, come on, you have to go to this party, you have to get out, you can talk about your book if you like. That will also help. But learn to network, at the very least, even if it's just not a matter of friends. It's
make relationships, which, as we say, in genre fiction, we know how hard that is, because we'd all rather be at home reading.
Yes, you know, hey, conventions are always a good way to market, because this is your market. Hi, you write in fantasy, sci-fi. Go to those conventions.
Which is so funny for me, because we have, unlike a lot of other types of interest, we do have these giant events that we all go to that are only the types of people that we want to sell books to. Like, it feels like you should be an easier job than I think people make it out to be.
Yes, you would think that. Although one of the problems with conventions is going to be you are competing with a lot of, your competition is also there. And while this is not a zero-sum game, do make friends with other writers. There are going to be people where it's like, well, I've got a wish list on Amazon that's about yay big. Yes, your book's on it. It may not get there for a while because people only have so much money. So try to make friends with both the fans and your fellow writers. Try not to alienate too many people. Seriously.
That brings me to, like, probably the more important part of marketing. You do have your each book's marketing cycle that you go through. But building yourself up as a writer and someone who, you know, has a catalog that somebody might be interested in, how do you approach that? Like, do you just try and let the writing speak for itself, or do you kind of do any personal branding that, you know, to me, like, the idea of who you are as a writer is really going to be the thing that convinces someone to buy purchase on that book, if they feel like they can connect with you personally.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing with self-published marketing, because you are the brand. If you're going online and pissing people off, you got problems. I usually try not to start fights on Twitter for Twitter or social media in general, because, you know, that's a great way to piss people off and alienate them. Kevin J. Anderson, who has sold probably more books than I want to think about, has said he doesn't talk politics online, period, full stop. And there are people who will lean into it, like, you know, Larry Correa, who is a libertarian, so he doesn't like anybody particularly. I believe he once referred to Democrats are brain cancer, Republicans are colon cancer. So it's like, okay, fine.
A man after my own heart.
Yeah, pretty much. Hey, I'd be a libertarian, but too many libertarians have told me I'm doing it wrong.
There's nothing more libertarian than telling you you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I've noticed. But I try not to piss people off online. I've seen authors spit on their fans on Twitter, and I don't get it. I could name some names, but I don't think I would hold them up as examples of what not to do.
Within comics, that seems really, like, that's really popular amongst, like, the comic book crowd.
It's de rigueur. I'm trying to figure out, you know, how is Marvel still in business with some of their authors? Or, you know, they finally got rid of someone from Star Wars. I keep calling him Wendigo. Chuck Wendig. Chuck Wendigo just fits him better. Where it's like, you know, his Twitter feed was so toxic. Even though he was saying technically all the right things, he alienated so many people, Disney finally kicked him off of Star Wars, the comic book. And he was the guy who did one of their first novels after Disney bought Star Wars. Then they figured out, oh wait, the entire Star Wars brand of novels really hit it big with Timothy Zahn. Maybe we should hire him back. Oh wait, they did. Then now it's 6 books later. And I think they're all bestsellers. Who could have guessed?
Well, they never should have removed canon in the first place, but who am I?
That's an hour-long rant right there.
Right on. Well, Declan, thank you so much for all of your information today. Hopefully my listeners will get something that they can pull from it to help them in their journeys. I have no doubt that there's something in there for everybody. But before you go, real quick, what do you have that's going on out there right now?
Right now, I've got multiple things going. I had book 5 of my space opera come out April 25th, and I think it was the same week that my vampire romance, Love at First Bite, got re-released through my new publisher, Three Ravens Press. So I've got about 5 books to market right now, and it's kind of confusing on which one am I pushing today. So yeah, I've got those coming out now. I've got another 3 that are in the hopper. They're being edited through my beta readers before going to my publisher. So the publisher is just going to get 3 books dropped on them at once. I'm sure they're going to love that. I've got anthologies coming out my ears. The Fantastic School anthologies, which are, you know, if you like Harry Potter, here's more of Magic School stuff. And if you hate J.K. Rowling with a passion, well, here's the same genre, but it's not her. That sort of thing. But they've been doing it for 5 years now. I've got that anthology. I've got a Shoot the Devil anthology. First one came out last year. There's another one coming up that I've already submitted to. So I'm keeping busy, and three people have sent me their books for me to read over and edit. So this is going to be fun. And eventually I get around to unpacking, you know, the house.
Right on. Well, once again, thank you so much for coming on, boss.
Thank you for having me.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.